Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This month, Streaming Things is brought to you by Chester Copperpot, Jillian Morgan, Aaron Layton,
Ghost,
Andrew Gray, Casey McCain, Crystal Trujillo, Emmy, Jeanette Murphy, Enza, Jen Robinson, John Collins, Kalisha Reeves, Kate, Kiki Newton, Stanton, and Valerie. Welcome back. My name is Chris.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things, the end of our Andor coverage, which never really began.
Yeah.
We did episodes 1 through 3. We intended on covering the show in 3-episode bursts, like a burst rifle in Call of Duty.
Ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta.
Or real life. I assume those are all real guns. I don't know.
Probably.
Never verified if those are real guns.
Who knows?
I will try very hard not to slip into a terrible imitation of an English accent, but I did, in fact, watch Shaun of the Dead and Harry Potter today. So,
and we're talking about Andor. Lots of British accents.
Yes. I don't know why I just clapped my lips. Not a good audio thing. At the top, I want to apologize to those of you who are watching the show on YouTube, just in general, for having to look at my face. But specifically, if I look bored or pained at any point today, it's because I am, in fact, the latter. I have a migraine coming upon me, and I don't want to cancel the show today. Too many of you are looking forward to this coverage of a couple of these things. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to power through. I should be okay. But if at any point Steve's talking and I look like I just could not care less, that's not true. It's just
He only cares a little.
I might have to pinch the bridge of my nose to make the pain go away or something like that.
Have you done the thumb trick?
Is there a thumb trick?
So like the webbing in your thumb there's a pressure point. And if you like pinch it, sometimes that can alleviate a headache.
Okay. I will try that periodically.
It works a little bit for me. Some people like swear by it. I haven't really had a lot of success with it myself, but that is an option for you.
You ever seen the movie Major Pain?
Yes.
That's what that reminds me of, when he's trying to, you know, he take the pain off of that arm there, and then he breaks his fingers. That might work, by the way. If I just caused enough pain in my hand, it would remove my attention.
I can go get a hammer. You want me to just like take a hammer to it right here, right now? We'll do it.
It might work. But a cool benefit to me is I stopped watching Andor, not on purpose. I just got overwhelmed. I have to watch so many things for like TikTok and shit like that, that I slowed down on Andor. I fell behind. And I told you this, Steve. I don't think I ever mentioned it on air. But I had only seen up to episode 6 for the longest time, because that was when my buddy Jimmy got married. I watched episode 6 with the wedding party, mm-hmm, and my baby. And so I was really distracted. That's not how I watch. I'm the type of person, I don't even look at my phone or anything. Or if somebody comes in, like my wife will sometimes be like, hey, do you know where the scissors are? And like, unless I'm watching something I've seen many times, but usually even then I'm kind of a douchebag. I'll pause it and then answer her and like it, make sure she doesn't want anything else. And then I'll press play. Sounds normal, but I don't think it is. Like, I think a lot of people would just be like, oh, I missed a few seconds. Who cares? Mm-hmm. It just drives me nuts. So it drove me nuts that I missed a good portion of the episode, which seemed really cool. So then I got home.
That's the heist episode.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, that's the height.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
You don't want to miss that one.
So then I got home. I rewatched episode 6 again with my daughter. And she's so snuggly. I can't describe to you what it feels like to have her cuddling, her smooth skin against her neck, her going the goo goo gaga. So I fell asleep. So I tried to watch it twice and missed it twice.
Oh no.
But only like the last 15 minutes, both times. So that disheartened me so much because I'm so behind on so many things. I'm like, I don't want to watch this episode a third time. This is crazy. So I called you, Steve, like a month later, like I got something to confess. We need to talk about Andor soon, but I'm way behind. You're like, just watch the last 15 minutes of episode 6. You've seen, you know what happens. So that's what I did. And I ended up watching episodes 7 through 12. And then the last 15 minutes of 6 in 24 hours, which was the other day. Yeah.
What a day.
I had a great day doing that. That was a good binge, you know?
Seriously. Because you get the end of the Aldani heist, you get the whole prison experience all in one go. And then, of course, the finale, that is some prime TV right there.
Yeah. And my experience of this show was colored by, because I have push notifications on for the Discord, even though that means I constantly get notifications on my phone. I don't want to turn them off because I contribute, I feel like personally, not enough in there as it is. That at least I want to know what everybody's saying. Mm-hmm. But when I tell you the amount of times I picked up my phone and started to read, you know, whatever, Mando and, you know, all the different characters I love on Discord. And then I saw it said hashtag Andor spoilers. And I would go, and like
throw your phone across the room.
I went through 9 phones. I'm telling you, so many people just talking about Andor in the Discord. Yeah. And I wanted to participate, but if you notice, I've never written in there. That's why I wasn't caught up.
You just caught up a couple days ago,
but it would just be like a snippet. I would see like you or Jen or somebody just like, oh my God, that episode, guys, I'm crying. And I'm just like, no, stop it. Stop it.
Stop it.
So I'm glad everybody was enjoying it so much. But I was kind of getting teased. I was getting teased by the Discord the whole time. Like, oh, what is going on? It's so amazing. And I would have never guessed that he gets arrested again, goes to prison. There's like a 3-episode arc with, I didn't even know Andy Serkis was in this show. Did you before it was released?
I did not know.
Yeah. Like when I saw his face, I was like, what?
Yeah. Same. There. I did see someone before I watched the episode where Andy Serkis comes out. Someone tweeted like, man, what a great return to Star Wars for a very specific actor. And I'm like, oh, who could that be? Interesting. So I was going into it thinking like a major character would return, but really it's just Andy Serkis returning as a completely different character. Or is he?
Did he play Snoke or something?
Yeah, he was Snoke in the sequel trilogy.
What if it's Kino Loy breaks out of prison?
Well, he can't swim, so he's like stuck in prison. So we're like, I know what we can do with this guy.
Yeah, after another 100-year bit. Well, Steve has a structure in mind for this episode, since it's a little strange. Our typical gag, if you will, is to break everything down scene by scene after we watch it. But we obviously didn't do that with Andor. So it's always tough when we go to just talk about something in generalities like every other podcast does. It's not really our forte. So Steve has a little bit of a structure here.
Yeah. Well, before we get into it too much, I got to do this. Okay. I got to get into character. We're talking about Star Wars. We're talking about rebellions. Mm-hmm. So it has to happen. I came prepared for those in the YouTube.
Oh man.
Yeah.
You look good as a fascist.
Got my little space fascist cap on. It's the little black Imperial Commando caps that they wear.
What's the thing on the front there? Was that where a button used to go?
No, that's just what they put on there.
It's really? It's their little symbol?
It's just a little button. I don't know what it really... I think it has something to do with a rank, but I don't know enough about it to understand. I want to find out
what rank you are.
I don't have the little... They also have the rank pins and the little pen thing that goes into their chest pocket, but I'm not nerdy enough to know what... you know, how to read those ranks. So, but I had to wear the hat.
It's Grand Moff Steve.
Grand Moff Steve. I love it. We're going to do a lot of hat based comedy this week. Just warning you guys for the rest of the episode this week. But yeah, my thoughts that we would do is first we would go over overall thoughts of the show in general. Like, how do we think it succeeded? Did it fail? Then we would talk about some of the major story arcs that happened in the series. And then we would move on to some, you know, miscellaneous bits we want to talk about and questions that we got from you, the listeners.
Awesome. Well,
but Chris,
go ahead. I'm used to being the leader, but you're the Grand Moff, so now I'm freaking out.
Well, you have to tell me, sir, overall, what are your thoughts on Andor?
I loved it.
Yeah?
Absolutely loved it. So this is by a mile the best Star Wars TV show that has ever existed. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big fan of Mandalorian and season one and two for the most part. Did not like Boba Fett. Did not watch Clone Wars.
The Boba Fett?
The Book of it. The Book of it. I didn't watch Clone Wars or what's the other terribly Rebels. Animated one? Rebels. Yeah. Because I don't like the animation. We've talked about it a lot on the show. I do know.
The animation for Rebels is barf.
Barf.
Yeah.
It's actually a style called barf.
It's a really good show. Like, the storyline of Rebels is legitimately great.
So you say.
The artwork is really hard to get
Rebels
through.
Is the one, right, where you've even sent me spreadsheets of how to watch the good episodes.
That's Clone Wars.
Clone Wars. That's
Clone Wars has... There's a wild inconsistency in Clone Wars as to what is good and what is bad.
Yeah.
Rebels is the one that has meth Yoda in it.
Yes.
Where the way they animate Yoda looks like he's just like, hey guys, want some crack? You do.
Stole copper. I did.
Hard times I have fallen on.
There's no copper in the swamp. He had to travel. Yeah. So easily the best show. I would think I have a hot take potentially.
Ooh, hot take.
So already I'm not respected by many of the hardcore Star Warses, which I'm okay with, seeing how they interact with each other online. Mm-hmm. But my favorite Star Wars film, I've said this before too, is probably Rogue One.
Yeah.
So I went into Andor like really excited. Like, if it's anything like Rogue One, right? Like, I know Greg Fraser, I don't think was the director of photography on this one, but you know, hopefully it'll look good. Hopefully it'll have like the gritty story, open up the universe. It did all of that stuff, exactly what I wanted it to do. I mean, I would also venture to say this might be, I don't know if I can say that. I don't think it's my, this might be one.
Do it. Do it. Say it. Say it. Speak your truth.
I don't think it's a true hot take because I think I still, I do love a good lightsaber every now and then, right? Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Even though it's a weapon that makes no fucking sense. Like tactically it's dumb.
But it's cool as shit.
It's very cool.
It's so cool.
But the whole like it, Star Wars was ruined for me, or lightsabers are ruined for me, when somebody pointed out years ago, like they could just turn the lightsaber off temporarily and turn it back on and stab each other like very instantly. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh yeah, they could do that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. This is one of the, I wanted to say this is the best Star Wars thing, period, ever.
Yeah.
I don't know that I could say that accurately, but it's up there, man. It's top three for me.
Oh, without a doubt, definitely top three for me as well. This show is so good. It is the best Star Wars has ever been in terms of writing, in terms of acting, in terms of substance and nuance. Like, it has no Star Wars even comes close to this show in those regards. Now, you can make the argument for spectacle, for fun, for, you know, overall enjoyment. Yeah, you can say like, oh, I like the original trilogy better, or even the prequels better. I don't know who the fuck that is, but you can make those arguments for like overall fun and spectacle. Those are the other movies with, you know, big space battles and Jedi doing flippy shit. But if you really want like a grounded, really well thought out story with amazing performances, as far as the eye can see, you come to Andor for that.
I do love flippy shit.
Who doesn't love flippy shit? Remember Darth Maul? The flippiest of flippy.
Well, I don't know if he's the flippiest. Yoda when he fights Dooku.
Oh, good point.
That is a flippy motherfucker.
That is a good point. That is a good point.
But yeah, I adored this show. And again, I got to experience kind of a Benji version of it. So I regret not being a part of the discourse week to week, but it was, I was just amazed at where the show went. I had no idea that it was going to go so, it's so different. The second half is so different than the first half. Every bit is good, massively different. And then the finale had me crying and stuff. A few things that I want to point out, and this is a little inappropriate, but I just want to get it off my chest, if you will. Like, I don't want to be burdened by this the entire show.
Share your trauma.
I think I talked about it on episodes 1 through 3. I am just unabashedly in love with Bix Colleen. I think that's one of the most beautiful people I've ever seen in my life and like the entire galaxy. And put a flag there. I have a question for you. Star Wars canon wise.
Okay.
So I already knew I love Bix Colleen.
What's the actress's name? Adria Arjona?
Yes.
I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
That is correct. However, I found myself mentally cheating on her very quickly.
Okay. With Cyril.
Am I the only... But that guy looks like Kyle MacLachlan. It freaks me out. He's so creepy. Is anyone else like ridiculously attracted to Mon Mothma?
Genevieve O'Reilly is beautiful.
I was like, oh my God, I'd vote for her.
That's my senator.
That's what I'm saying. Like her hair is so, it's not coiffed, but it's like slicked back like Draco Malfoy a little bit.
Yeah.
But in this like perfect shape.
And she's always got these really trendy dresses.
Yeah. She's so regal. The dresses are immaculate. I was just like, I don't know what's going on, but I feel really political right now.
I want to knock on doors.
Just go, what's that called? Canvassing?
I don't know what it is about Mon Mothma, but I feel like I could have a beer with her.
More like Mon Mommy, am I right?
No. Don't like it.
It's just like Galati, but it's Mon Mommy.
I don't like it.
Yeah. I'm tweeting that later.
Oh, no.
I'm tweeting that
later.
Oh, no. So I wanted to get that off my chest, or it was good. I was just going to be bursting with that the entire time. But yeah, huge fan. This is one of the best things they've ever done. It's a giant home run. And it's I wonder how much I love it has to do with the 12 episode runtime. Like they actually gave it because they've been doing this 6-episode, 8-episode thing the entire time Disney Plus has existed. Mm-hmm. And every show feels like anything you can think of, like, you know, Moon Knight, anyone you can name probably has like 2 to 3 great episodes and then a bunch of garbage. And it feels like it was just a rushed story that they should have just made a movie out of if they were going to do it that way. I'm thinking of Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah.
Yes.
That should have been a 2-hour movie.
Somebody edited it into a movie. Did you watch that?
No, I bet it's way better.
Yeah, I heard it's actually really good as a movie, but yeah. So that's my experience with almost everything Disney Plus does. And they gave this one, for whatever reason, 12 episodes to just really breathe and really get to know these characters. And like the whole Mon Mothma storyline, I'm surprised that was even in there. Like you don't really need it, but it's such a great thing to have there, right? Like,
yeah, this show is incredible in terms of, you know, it's basically the story about how the rebellion comes together because there are all these different groups that are fighting against the Empire in some way, shape or form. There's the Partisans, there's Saw Gerrera's group, there's like the Human Centric League or whatever they're called. Mm-hmm. I think Saw Gerrera like names like 10
he
of them.
Saul, yeah, he shits on all of them. Because he's an anarchist, right?
He's an ox!
I love
Forrest. He's an ox!
Forrest Whitaker's so good.
But this show is really good about not only kind of, they think of everything, right? Like if you are really going to start a rebellion and stand up to a fascistic empirical order, what does that mean? How do you do that in the face of such insurmountable odds? And while they're doing that, they're sharing really, really human stories at a macro level of regular people living in the universe, right? You know, how does someone go from like a Cassian Andor who's just, you know, he's kind of swindling people for money. He's just trying to get by. He's stealing parts. He's looking for a sister. How do you get from that to a guy who's willing to die to help just his neighbors, you know? And then you've got all these other stories like Mon Mothma, who's in the cause, you know, how does she get around funding a rebellion despite being a major public figure? You get to Luthen, who is like, how do you create and unite these factions without, you know, selling yourself away, but also kind of prodding the Empire into making mistakes to fuel more rebellion? You know, it's just really well thought out, and it allows you to really sit in the world and kind of take in what's happening. Like I love, one of my favorite things about this show is the fact that you get to learn a lot of customs about cultures in the world. Like there's the whole Aldani plot and the people of Aldani, they have this, you know, spiritual
that star system thing.
Yeah. The eye, they go to the mountain, but you can hear how the Empire has slowly been trying to do a cultural genocide with these people where they're kind of slowly, but surely
just doing a genocide.
They're just doing a cultural genocide.
What are you
genocide.
Doing today? A genocide.
Yeah. You know, just a good old
down home
family cultural genocide. But then you also get to see, you know, the cultural funeral rites of Ferrix, you know, all that, you know, the brick planet. Well, guess what? All those bricks are people.
I know.
The bricks are people, which is a great metaphor because a lot of the, someone said like, hey, someone on Twitter said Andor is great because it showed that the greatest power, the greatest weapon in Star Wars isn't a lightsaber. It's a brick. And I'm like, no, the metaphor is literally be the brick, throw it and be it.
I'm bricked. Wait, I don't know.
No. But no, I can't say enough for just how incredibly well done. And if I can jump on a little bit of a soapbox, just in the time. Well,
it's not much of a soapboxes are typically about a foot high. I mean, you really just step up there. Steve.
Well, let me just, there we go. I'm up. In the times we live in, it's a little worrisome. I know at least I worry a little bit about some of the fascist tendencies that are in our current world and political world and climate. So I love it. Like how this show kind of speaks to that in a way where it's like, yeah, fuck these guys. Let's get a brick. Let's eat the rich. Come on. Let's do it. Everybody who's with me.
It's always unfortunate that I don't know if those folks would even watch this show. And if they did, I don't think they would get it. You know what I mean?
Well, it's the same people who are like, wait a minute, Homelander's the bad guy.
Right. Yeah. Or not even that. Like, I think you were talking about some people online that were, you know, complaining about how Disney, a beloved children's company, would come out with, oh, they're just killing people now. The good guys are just killing people. And
well, great moral story, Disney, having right. The good guys murder innocent stormtroopers.
That's the whole point. That's why this is such an interesting Star Wars thing. I think Cassian Andor can be related. You know, he's a lot like a Han Solo character, like the swashbuckling. But instead of being just so cute and charismatic, like they really leaned into what that kind of character's day to day would be like. And yeah, he's mm-hmm. killed some people and like he's made some very questionable or outright dishonorable moral choices. And that's what makes him so interesting. That's what how he learns and how he grows like real people do. Right. Mm-hmm. Which is what makes such a good story. Like I think Han Solo in the early Star Wars was almost there. And then Lucas almost kind of retroactively made him more of a cartoonish good guy character. Right. Yeah. Like originally
the Han shot first.
Yeah, he thing. Did yeah. shoot Greedo first.
Didn't hesitate. Just shot him.
That was the move. He's about survival. Right. Yeah. And then retroactively, he was like, well, he moved to the side.
He's a pretty good dude.
You know, malarkey or whatever. McClunky. That's right.
McClunky. Yeah. Yeah. It's Joe Biden sitting there. Joe what? Biden played by Greedo. Malarkey.
Malarkey.
Have you heard of Dark Brandon?
So, you know, I love those aspects of this show. Like they had like torture and stuff in this show and yeah. And like a really effective torture. But the main cool thing that Star Wars has needed for so long is like it's like, oh, they always say this is the flag I planted. I'm sorry. I'm trying to so many thoughts competing at once. Star Wars confuses me because they always say galaxy, right? It's in a galaxy far, far away. Mm-hmm. Rule the galaxy, the galaxy, the galaxy. How many planets can be in one fucking galaxy, though? A lot, I guess.
Oh, a lot.
Like ours has 9, so I'm just not used to that, I guess.
No, our solar system has 9. We are just one solar system.
In the galaxy.
In the galaxy, yeah.
Wow, you're right. I'm a dummy.
So like the first 3 episodes, they're in the Preoxmoor Lana sector. That's like the Preoxmoor Lana solar system. So there's Ferrix and then that other planet where the security forces are.
Yeah.
That's in one solar system.
Galaxy bigger than solar system, then universe.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. See, that was my space dumbness coming out. I always confuse me.
My space blindness.
Fuck, we got 9 in my galaxy. Well, that's the cool thing about this show is it finally opens up Star Wars because in all the other shit, we get all these movies, all these shows, this whole galaxy to work with. And we've only ever gotten Tatooine, Coruscant and the Skywalker family, you know, and it becomes frustrating as I wouldn't say casual fan, but, you know, someone who wants to be a hardcore fan. I'm just like, come on, man.
No, it's a galaxy literally just rife for all kinds of storytelling. And as somebody who's like been super into the books that are no longer canon anymore, but I've read Star Wars books my whole life. I've seen all what these can different, be done. I've seen what can be done. You just have to, you know, trust that, you know, there's a good story and do it. And luckily, Tony Gilroy, who is the showrunner, creator, and
he wrote at least
5 episodes at least. You know, he clearly has a good vision. And I think Diego Luna also has a pretty good you know, he's kind of been a little bit more in the creative input on things. I know they're definitely going to this. They wrote this first season with a second season in mind. So the show would only last two seasons.
Yeah. Well, they wanted more. But as my understanding is that Diego Luna said no.
Yeah. Diego says, I can't do more than 24 episodes of a Star Wars.
I don't want to be stuck in a Star Wars forever.
And, you know, I get it.
I want to address something up front, too, that I've heard a lot of people like mostly trolls. Right. But to finish my thought, we got more planets in this than I think anything else as far as like unknown, previously unknown planets. We got Ferrix, Aldani, Niamos, Narkina 5, and Segra Milo, I think, are all different places that we go to in this show. Like the beach planet.
Oh, yeah. I love the
we got a beach. I don't know if we ever seen an ocean before.
I love Myrtle Beach as a planet. Yeah. Like, that's just a sad tourist trap planet destination.
Like, it didn't look fun. So it's definitely like a Myrtle Beach, not like a California.
Yeah.
Anyway, but a lot of people have said, and I hate this criticism about any prequel. It's like, what? It's not even interesting because you know what's going to happen. Like, it's not even interesting because you know what's going to happen. I'm like, have you ever watched any historical movie ever? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you go, Gladiator's out. You know what I mean? Like,
have you watched any movie ever? Like, 99% of movies, like, oh, I bet the good guy wins. Well, oh, shit, they did?
Right. It's like, that has nothing to do. The fact that we know, I can't wait to watch Rogue One again with all this different context that I have for the character of Andor.
Literally, the only thing you know about this show and what's going to happen is that
spoilers for Rogue One
is that, spoiler alert, he dies in Rogue One. You don't know anything else about that character other than that he was in Rogue One and died in it.
Yeah.
And he's morally gray at the beginning of Rogue One.
This will be crazy because now we have like the longest, like if we want to redo timeline order, you start with the prequels and then you would go Andor, then you would go Rogue One, and then you would go 4, 5, and 6, right?
Pretty much, yeah, basically.
That'd be a hell of a watch.
There's a Kenobi in there somewhere.
Nah, is there? I'll just watch that YouTube cut or whatever of the movie version.
Yeah.
Really hated Kenobi so much. But yeah, I don't know. What's the next thing on the agenda here?
Well, I just kind of wanted to touch on some of the major story arcs because originally our initial plan was to kind of cover every 3 episodes, which was kind of like retroactively a good idea that we didn't capitalize on because this show is almost broken up into like mini trilogies.
Yeah, it would have been a great idea.
Yeah, every 3 episodes was like a good story arc ended. So we covered the first 3 episodes, which was kind of like the security forces trying to go after Andor because he killed those two guys at the titty bar.
Yeah, the downfall of and insanity of Cyril Karn, right? Is his name?
Yeah.
And the, you know, what puts Andor in the pickle to be coming up with somebody like Luthen.
Yeah. So, and Luthen saves him and he's off to possibly join the rebellion. That's how it kind of ends. Well, then we get the Aldani heist arc, which is basically Luthen puts him connected with a rebel cell on Aldani led by Vel. And together they're planning on breaking into and stealing the monthly payroll for this entire Imperial sector, which I love. I love that idea because rebellions need money, right?
Yeah, yeah.
How do you get money, especially because they also introduced the fact that Mon Mothma can't move her money around as well. So how are they going to get money? Just fucking steal it from the quarterly payroll, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just kind of, and heists are always fun. Heists in Star Wars, let's do it. And on top of that, like I said, you get this really cool kind of cultural look into the people of Aldani and how the Empire is doing a cultural genocide. They dammed up their holy river. They're trying to get them to stop participating in their holy acts.
You get to see the effects of, you know, the Empire on all cultures, like small things you wouldn't think about. Like, this is why it's being, this is why people are so upset, right? You see it later with those weird, like, not weird, but they're just aliens, obviously, really alien looking aliens. After they bust out of prison, you run into those to like,
oh yeah,
they're like fishermen.
They're taking all the water.
All the squigglies. But yeah, it affects them too. But anyway, yeah, you get to see the effect that this has on the entire galaxy.
Yeah. And you got the one guy who's sort of in charge of the Empire. Who's like, they really like smells here. And it's like, he's holding that like fur coat or whatever it was. That's like ceremonial and obviously very important to the people. But this guy's like, let's get on with it. I hate this bullshit.
Right.
Just totally not respecting the people that they're lording over.
Yeah, respecting other cultures.
And Cassian gets to
be pure colonizer mentality.
Oh, 100%. And Cassian gets to be introduced to a couple of the of the fellow rebels with there. We meet Cinta. We meet Skeen. We meet
Nimic.
Yeah. Who's the manifesto guy. He's the true believer in the cause.
He's the beginning of the whole rebellion, really.
He really is.
They use that as that's their recruiting tool now.
Yeah. And you get to see like just how, you know, Andor's not quite there. He's still like, I just want to get paid and I want to get out. I'm about surviving. It's dumb to band together.
Yeah. He doesn't think he has no love for the Empire, but he doesn't think there's anything he can do about it. Right. Yeah. He doesn't want to get caught up in that, which, you know, I can understand. It turns out Skeen, same way.
Yeah.
He's just in it for Skeen. I want to ask you, having watched that episode three times, but the end where what happens with Skeen only once. And I'm glad I did go revisit it because it's, even though I knew what went down, it wasn't the way I imagined. He didn't really need to kill Skeen, which I love. Like I said, like that's the moral ambiguity of the character. Like there wasn't really anything too for threatening about that. Like he could have just been like, no, I don't think we should do that. And then all three of them live. Right. I guess there's a possibility that Skeen was going to kill him or fuck them both over later.
Well, I think what his whole thing is that the whole three episodes, he's like really, no one trusts him because he's been this late addition to the team and everyone's so paranoid about being caught. And then come to find out this guy's been planning to fuck over everyone from the start. And he's like, you're just like me. And Andor knows like, I cannot trust this guy, period. So he's just,
that's what I mean.
Get like, him off the board.
And in a lesser movie or not a lesser, but like in a more childish movie, you can't have the main character do that. They can't kill anybody until there's 100% no other way, right?
Yeah.
If at all, but there's 100% no other choice. Then
yeah, dude was still talking to him and he just drew his
mid conversation. I get it. Yeah. But at the same time, that's not something a hero would normally do because there was still 40% chance you could work this out, you know, but Andor cannot live with 60% chance of danger. Mm-mm. That's you're done. I loved it.
Andor has trust issues. Yeah,
I get it.
I get it.
And then he comes in, puts his gun on Vel and Doc. And he's like, look, I just want my money. You know, and it was very like, there was like a Tarantino-ness to it that I really liked. Like I wanted the doctor to take one of those forearms and pull out a pistol and him have to go too, you know, like, told you not to move.
That doctor was cool.
He was.
I like that.
He'll be a really good doctor. He's got all those different hands.
That's if I had one criticism about this show is that there weren't enough aliens in it. That's the only criticism I have. It's very human. And I get why, because it's expensive to make.
Aliens, you had the fish guys and you have the doctor. That's pretty much it.
There's not a lot.
And you know what I really wanted, what I was upset about in the finale when Ferrix is doing the rebellion.
You do an rebellion.
Because they're trying to do a genocide and they're trying to do a rebellion.
They rebel.
Why are we like the Mean Girls podcasting about Andor? stop trying to make Ferrix happen. that guy that went to press down on Andor for the money that he owed Brasso or whoever it was.
Oh, yeah.
The giant Nurchi. Monster. Yeah, where he's like, I don't know. He told me to just stand here.
Well,
I wanted him to show back up and like pick up a fucking stormtrooper like, bah! I was like, where's that guy? That's going to be their secret weapon. But it was just Brasso with a brick was their big muscle.
Yeah.
I wanted him to come back.
There were like two aliens in that mob.
Plus you got the dogs that junkyard guy's dogs are pretty alien-y.
I love those. The little ghoul dogs.
I'm pipping the dog. I got a massive underbite.
they make their, they do the Aldani heist. They lose a couple of comrades. I don't have their names written down, unfortunately, but they make their escape through the eye, which was a really cool set piece of, you know, flying through this, brilliantly colored meteor shower. And luckily, was his name Nimic?
Yeah. Nimic. Luckily, yeah.
Nimic. Well, he gets squished.
Yeah, a little bit squished.
But he's got his little analog computer that has a flight plan for them, and he's able to kind of tell Cassian where to go, and they can escape. The one thing I loved about the scene, as a Star Wars nerd, this is the nerdiest thing to ever like, but in that scene, you got to see how TIE fighter pilots got in the TIE fighters, which is something I knew. Like, I'm pretty sure that's what happened, but to see it on screen where they run down the little aisle and they walk down the ladder and they open up the hatch and hop in, I was like, yeah, get in that TIE fighter.
That is cool. And they're like parked vertically or something though, right?
Yeah, they're like suspended from the ceiling.
That's right.
Yeah.
Very, not a good design, those twin ion engines.
In, was it the first season Mandalorian? What's his name? Gideon, Moff Gideon. He shows up in a TIE fighter, but it lands and like the wings folded.
Yeah.
And I remember when that happened, I was like, oh no, that's, I mean, neat, but that feels wrong.
That's not how that
happens. Something fundamentally unnatural about doing that. I don't like it. No, thank you. it's like seeing it. Like, I don't know.
That isn't how my toys worked.
Yeah, that's not how my toys work. The wings would pop off because there was explodey action.
There was one thing, I know I'm jumping around a lot. I'll blame it on the migraine. One of the coolest plane things I've ever seen in a Star Wars, which is therefore in anything ever, happened in this show. Do you know what it was?
Was it the lightsaber guns?
Yes.
In Luthen's ship.
Luthen's ship is awesome.
Yeah, I love that thing.
He like pooped out all his little, what are those called? Where you throw them and you might like... It's an actual weapon that like ninjas use.
Shurikens?
Not a shuriken. It's like, they're like little jumping jacks, but you throw them on the ground, people step on them.
Yeah.
You know? But anyway, he like shoots those out of the ship's butt into the tractor beam. And then the TIE fighters come out and he has the lightsabers on the sides of the ship and he like spins and cuts two TIE fighters in half.
Yeah.
Like, that was fucking cool.
Luthen's ship is so awesome. That dude is rich as hell because you know that ship is like the most like advanced
and
ship.
And you got to see that he's about that life. You know what I mean? Like you saw a little bit of that when he busted Cassian off of Ferrix when he had the charges planted outside in advance. But other than that, you don't get to see anything but him like hiding and planning things. But it's like, yeah, he gets his hands dirty. He knows what to do.
Yeah. Speaking of Luthen, how did you like his subplot of him kind of establishing the spy network and the Rebel Alliance? And he's got like a lot of hands and a lot of pots. You know, he's working with Saul Guerrero. He's working with Krieger. He's working with, what's his name? The ISB spy. I have his name written down, but yeah, he's working with that guy. Lonnie. That's his name. Lonnie.
Fucking Lonnie.
He's Will's dad. and he's working with Mon Mothma, you know, and he's got his, assistant, Kayla. Or Clea. I thought they were calling her Leia for half the episode. I'm like, really? Another Leia in Star Wars? It's Clea with a K.
Yeah, that's brave.
I love Stellan Skarsgård in the show.
Yes, he was the perfect casting. I think Luthen Rayle's character is amazing. I think it's great because like the scene where he has to leave his spy in the ISB, he's like, oh, I got a daughter now. And plus, I'm going to tell you, Anto Krieger and the 50 men are all going to die. And he's like, well, we got to let them die. Or otherwise, they're going to know that you're, you know, there's a spy in our midst. It's more important. And it just goes to show you, like, you can't beat the Empire without making these kinds of decisions. Right. And, mm-hmm. and like the mistrust between Saul and him, like none of the rebellion factions even trust each other. And it's just so cool to see because all you get from the original trilogy is just like, oh, it's just this.
We're the good guys.
Organized network up. It's a trap. You know, that
Empire's coming for you.
Yeah.
Loose lips sink ship.
And so they all work. who leads them? No one knows. They just all work together, baby. And it doesn't really make any sense. And it's really nice to see like, oh, this was like the dirty foundation of it. You know, the point where he was going to kill Andor just because he knows who he is. Right. And like, I'm more important than any one person.
Mm-hmm. That little speech he gives to Lonnie when Lonnie's like, what do you sacrifice? And
yes,
he kind of goes into, I sacrifice, love. I sacrifice a good night's sleep. My entire life. I'm doomed to use the tools of my enemy. And such a powerful performance. And even we'll get to this, but even like at the end, during Malva's big speech at the end, there's a couple cutaways to Luthen just kind of like, fuck, that's a good speech. Like
yeah.
he's like getting into it too.
And, yeah. Cause ultimately they all are motivated by what Malva's saying. Is it Malva or Marva?
Marva. Yeah, I said Malva. It's Marva.
But what Marva's saying, and they lose sight of that or they get too caught up in their paranoia and schemes and, you know, but he's there's this like V for Vendetta speech from Marva and he's moved, you know, like, yes, I wish I was Hugo Weaving or Aunt Petunia.
Gassinander.
But I'm just Skarsgård.
I'm just trying to sell some antiquities. You want to come to my Easter egg farm? Here it is.
Yeah. My Easter egg farm.
Dude, we didn't get to talk about it, but his antiquity shop is just rife with Star Wars Easter eggs. It's kind of insane.
I don't get any of them.
Oh, dude. Like the first time that we went into that shop, I was like, what's that? Oh my God. That's that thing. And that's that thing. And that's that thing. Deep cut.
You were just Leonardo DiCaprio and all over that place.
Just constantly. And every time they went back, I found even more shit. In the background. It was so cool. There were Sith holocrons in there. There was like Twi'lek family headdresses back
from
there.
From Twilight?
No, not Twilight. It did sparkle though. There's so much. So let's talk about, speaking of the ISB, Daedra. What do you think about Daedra?
Her character is, it's good. It's cool. She's very capable. In the beginning, you see her investigating things and that guy kind of shuts her down when he snitches, like, Ferrix's mind plan. She has no right to be looking into that. I guess her character's purpose for me, it's like, it goes to show there's a lot of, arrogance and incompetence in the Empire that the rebellion's using to exploit. Mm-hmm. And then there's people like her, every bit as intelligent and capable as Luthen, but on the Empire's side. And that's where you get the competition, you know, there's a Tarkin. There's a lot of, what the fuck is, Donal Gleason's. Cause he's a douche.
Yeah. Oh God. What is his name? I am the spy.
There's a lot of him in the show, right?
Hux.
General Hux. Yeah. There's a lot of Huxes out there that leave a lot of weaknesses to be exploited in the Empire, but there's a lot of Amiras too, you know? And, mm-hmm. I thought her character was really cool. Now it's Cyril Karn that I find so interesting. Cyril, who eats nothing but cereal, by the way.
Yes.
His mommy gives him good
puffs.
His mommy gives him Captain Crunch every morning. His character is an interesting choice. I don't understand the point, but I like it. Mm-hmm. And season two is going to be their creepy partnership, I guess.
Yeah.
Cause she's like, oh, I guess I owe you a thank you at the end there. But, like the whole fact that he's obsessed with her and she's like, get away from me. There's a really chilling scene, I love with Daedra. Cause like, she's this domineering figure, right?
Very intense.
Everybody, she's so intense. Everybody fears her, but she's also, I just thought it was a unique, like she's still a woman, right? And so she can be.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Made to feel unsafe as any woman can, right? Because men suck. Yeah. And so there's this moment where she's happens to be by herself and she's used to being in charge and everybody fearing her. And he pops up out of nowhere and he's followed her across, I assume, planets. And she's like,
unnerved.
Why are you at my work?
It's fucking weird.
And she becomes like just a human, you know, like that whole domineering presence fades away. And you can tell she's like genuinely horrified. Like, the fuck, dude?
Yeah.
And she's shaken when she gets back to her office and like scenes like that. I'm like, why is this in a Star Wars? This is too good to be a Star Wars. Like there's so much nuance here is what I should say, I guess. Like,
yeah,
of humanity that I just didn't expect.
And it's incredible because there are villains in the show, quote unquote, bad guys. But the show goes really out of their way to humanize them. Like Cyril's a good example where Cyril's whole motivation is like he was working a security job, two dudes that he worked with gets murdered, and he's just kind of like flummoxed as to why no one is taking a murder seriously. He's like, isn't that our job? Aren't we supposed to stop criminals? And in his mind, Cassian Andor murdered those guys, and that's his driving force. And then just trying to follow the laws and the world that he believes in, he gets just kind of discarded by that whole world, but he's so desperate to get back in there and prove his loyalty. And he becomes obsessed with Daedra because she is sort of like the shining example of what he wants to be.
She's just
as dogged as
she is. She's not putting up with this shit.
She doesn't put up with that shit, but she's successful and he admires her for that so much, the point of where it's an unhealthy obsession.
Well, I also like his character specifically, and especially in conjunction with her, because it it goes to show you, like, this is the kind of person that is so doggedly supportive of fascist regimes and like these movements of hate and prejudice, right? Because he's like the quintessential incel. Like, his mommy's been mean to him his whole life, put so much pressure on him, and like all he eats is soggy cereal, and he just wants to, this is all he's got, right? He has no hobbies, no friends, certainly no love interest, no, you know, boyfriend or girlfriend,
he's
or anything.
Got mosque.
Yeah. Right.
Hello, sir.
Yeah.
Hello, sir. I'll do anything for you.
And you know what I mean, though? Like, it's interesting what they did. It's an indictment, I think, of, like you said, it's prescient for our times, mm-hmm. Unfortunately.
Anyway. The other thing that's very prescient for our times in regards to Deidre, and you touched on it a little bit, is she is incredibly competent, right? She is incredibly smart. She's just as good as Luthen, but because she's boxed in this fascistic regime that kind of puts more focus on ego rather than facts, right? There's literally a scene like the whole time she's like, we got to capture these rebels and interrogate them so that we can learn more about their network, who these people are, and we can root them out that way. And so she wants the Empire to capture Krieger to find out who Axis is or who Luthen is. And there's that scene where she talks to Director Qyburn, Partagaz, played
He's
by
great.
Anton Lesser. And she's like, why didn't we take him hostage? And she's like, well, this is because the Emperor wants to get the taste of Aldani out of his mouth. So we just wanted to ha-ha, fear us, we're bad, ha-ha.
So he wanted to show a victory to his boss, right?
Yeah, and it
highlights the bureaucracy of it.
Yeah, and we have suffered a couple years of someone who is at the top of a government who has a really frail ego and dumb people doing dumb shit just to placate an ego, right? And so it's a very prescient storyline, and I really got a lot out of that, because you see someone as capable as her meeting these roadblocks just because of a few male egos that can't even fathom, like, oh, you know, the rebels can hurt us. Puh, no, kill them and they'll never touch us.
Right.
And they're just making things worse for themselves, in spite of themselves. But let's continue to, let's touch on Bix's torture. You love Bix.
Yes. I love Bix.
What did you think about how they kind of capture her and torture her?
I was terrible to watch. Mm-hmm.
Isn't interesting.
Very interesting. The some kind of, I guess, genocided culture, extinct culture, that some kind of alien species who's like dying screams is some kind of defense mechanism that causes insanity or whatever. Right.
Yeah.
And they've captured that and messed with it a little bit and used it as, and then the fact that they say it's actually children when they turn hers on, and she's such a caring person throughout the show that you just immediately like, oh no.
Yeah.
Very creative idea, very diabolical. And I thought her performance was great. And like, she was completely broken by that. Like, even when he first comes to rescue her, you know, it broke my heart when she mm-hmm. was like, no, they're going to get angry. I'm just going to stay here. You know, it's not worth it. Right. Like, that's how people's spirits get broken by these things, metaphorically. And then literally in this torture case, I thought it was really effective, really well done.
100%. And then let's touch on Mon Mothma. Her story a bit.
Let's do.
It's, you know how we love in like Game of Thrones, we love like a good garden politicking.
Yes. Hers was all that.
Yeah. That's 100% Mon Mothma all the time. She's either doing like secret garden politicking in the back of Luthen's shop, in her car, in her living
room.
She
knows that the driver is a spy for the ISB. So she's using that at certain, like the whole epiphany she has at one point to, stage the argument with her husband Perrin about his gambling to cover the transactions on the bank, right?
Her husband sucks.
That was brilliant.
Yeah.
That was brilliant. But I didn't understand that because it seemed like a solution to her problem to not have to like sell her daughter, basically. And then she did it anyway. But they also made a point of showing that her daughter was like really supportive of that anyway, because she's like obsessed with Chandrillan heritage or whatever.
Yeah. And we learn a lot more about Chandrillan culture because I guess Chandrilla has arranged marriage is still
right.
And that's an interesting thing to talk about in a Star Wars. And especially when you think of like, oh, Mon Mothma, the character that's always been like one of the leaders of the rebellion.
Yeah.
Oh, she comes from an arranged marriage. That's new. Never knew that. Oh, her husband sucks. Holy shit. What's this about? Oh, her daughter hates her. That's sad. She's got a sister named Vel who's in the rebellion. I didn't know that. We just learned so much about this character. It was so interesting
when we found out that Vel was her sister.
Yeah. Was it her sister or cousin? Now that I'm thinking about it, it might be cousin.
Doesn't matter. Very close family.
Yeah.
Well, that told us so much about her character because whatever we thought about her, she doesn't have to, not that I'm a poor, right? So I'm this is coming from experience, but like you think that the rebellion will be made up of more people like Cassian Andor, right? That are like, have less choices. Like they, if they don't free themselves of this regime, then they have nothing, right? They live under the thumb of the Empire. So it makes sense that they would fight. Whereas when you find out that she's wealthy, she could easily play into this system and have a great life, or at least a privileged one, and is choosing to live down and dirty, and like, you know, rob payroll banks and stuff on Aldani. It told us so much about the character of Vel. Mm-hmm. So I know, I thought that was a cool twist, but yeah, the whole Mon Mothma plot, like I said, in a normal Disney Plus show, they would have taken all of that out and made it 8 episodes.
And it was honestly some of my favorite stuff. And Genevieve O'Reilly, I'm so happy for her because I don't know if listener, you may not know this, but Genevieve O'Reilly has been playing Mon Mothma for almost 20 years. She originally was cast as Mon Mothma for Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, and the scene that she shot was deleted. It's not in the final film, but you can watch it, where it's basically like a scene with her, Natalie Portman, Bail Organa, Jimmy Smits, and a couple other senators who are like, this whole Palpatine thing is kind of fucked up. Don't you guys think? Like, oh, I don't know, maybe. Like, they're basically kind of talking about, like, I think this government's going towards a bad way. Maybe we should start thinking about doing something about it. But that scene got cut. She came back and played Mon Mothma in Rogue One, which if you've seen that movie. But this show really kind of allowed her to kind of be something. It really adds so much to the character of Mon Mothma. Yeah. And Genevieve O'Reilly is just crushing it constantly. Like the scene where she's talking with Tay Como, her friend, and what's the gangster's name?
I forget.
Like that whole like scene where she's like, what are you asking from me? And he's like, I want an arranged marriage with my son and your daughter. And just the way you can see her kind of like hating herself for doing this.
Well, I love that line where she says, he's like, well, I know it's a lot to think about as he's leaving. And she's like, I'm not thinking about it. And he's like, that's the first untrue thing you've said. And you can just tell by her face that he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
In that instance, and really good scene.
Well, I think so. To touch on what you said, she can't touch her money or move her money around more than she is without that guy's help regardless.
I know. Okay.
So by putting the blame in front of her driver on her husband's gambling habits, that solves
the missing pieces.
Yeah.
And but then, not how to get money out.
And then she can have that arranged marriage with this known criminal, and the Empire will be like, oh, okay, it's because she did that thing. It takes the whole suspicion off her. They think it's because of this gambling issue.
Right.
Completely. Which is really smart.
Yeah. That was and super really smart.
Really cunning, but in like because you know, she's a moral character and you know that she hates doing that, and that's like killing her that she has to do something like that, but it's deft and the right, you know, if that's her goal is to create a rebellion, that's the best plan for her.
The writers also put in this whole plot line of how obsessed with the ancient ways her daughter is by her own choice, because they have that scene where she's at the chanty dinner table or whatever. And like her cousin or sister, you know, Vel's in there, and she's like, she just likes doing that shit. I don't know. It's kind of nerdy, but whatever. And so they put that in so that you would still, you're not going to hate, like, she didn't sell her daughter, right? Like, you can't hate the character of Mon Mothma. You can just see the conflict there, but it's like, well, her daughter does this by choice, you know, like, and they even made the daughter look kind of excited when she was going to meet the son. You know what I mean? Like, just a little bit of a genius ploy on the writers to not lose too much sympathy for the character of Mon Mothma.
Right. Right. Well, Mon Mothma is in a prison of her mind, which is a great segue to Cassian Andor's prison.
Who was in an actual prison.
Yeah. So this was a really incredible 3-episode arc. What was the planet's name for the prison? It was like this very squeaky clean prison.
Super clean.
That was like in the shape of the Imperial logo, which I thought was interesting. Like the Empire's like, let's build prisons in the shape of our flag. But it's like in the middle of the ocean, and they have all these prisoners working on parts.
I know that Niamos is the beach planet. Oh, Narkina 5, I think is the
Narkina 5
prisons. Yep.
But yeah, they're in this, there's several layers to this prison. Each layer, there are work shifts that are working on various parts. We don't know what they are yet. Did you see the post-credit scenes, Chris, of the final episode?
I did.
Okay.
They were building the Death Star.
Yeah, they're building pieces for the Death Star.
You saw
Star,
that
yeah.
little thing that they had made 100 times slide into place there and the actual like laser gun part of the Death Star. I thought that was so cool.
How messed up is that? That A, they're using basically slave labor to build the Death Star, but B, like Cassian worked on the thing that kills him ultimately. Like,
yeah.
Oh, it's sad. I kind of saw that coming. I kind of figured that's what they were doing. Did you see that coming at all?
I didn't see that it was the Death Star. I wasn't thinking about it now, because it was so obvious. Like there was lines where like, oh, we don't even know what we're building, but they need a lot of these things. And it should have been so obvious, but it just didn't even occur to me. I was so wrapped up in like the Mon Mothma stuff. Mm-hmm. And I love the whole prison. I like a good prison break. Like I love toppling regimes.
You love the CBS show Prison Break.
What's funny is I've never seen that. I would have probably loved it. Everybody likes that show. I used to love a movie. It stars Christopher Lambert.
Lambert.
Do you know who that is, right?
I do know Christopher Lambert.
It's called Fortress.
I've not seen that.
It's from 1992. It's a B movie, but it's basically this, that whole plot line with Cassian Andor in prison. It's like a super futuristic prison. They have implants put in their neck, like surgically, or in their stomachs or something. So whenever they try to break out, they just press a button and the inmate will explode. And like, it's this super impenetrable prison that you can't get out of, but it's horrible conditions. And then the whole movie, they stage this miraculous way to get the implants out of him and escape. And it reminded me of this, because like this perfect prison, like the floors can light up and electrocute you whenever they want. Like, how would you break out of this place? It's so well thought out. And then they, over a couple episodes, like, oh, there is a way, you know, and we need the help of Andy Serkis.
Oh, and how good is Andy Serkis in this role?
So good.
He's such a great actor in general. He has a wonderful voice.
And he always does all that digital stuff, which is so hard and so talented, but he never gets the credit he deserves because you don't even know it's him unless you're a nerd like us.
Yeah. And just kind of see him. So he plays a character named Kino Loy, and see him cool go name. From like the shift supervisor who's like, all right, everybody listen to me. This is what we're doing. Keep your heads down. And you'll get out of here when your time's up. And then kind of watching that character realize, oh, no one's getting out of here. We have to break out,
but he
ultimately knows that he can't escape because he can't swim and there's no way out for him, but he still goes through that journey to make sure all the people that are stuck there with him can escape.
I'm with that guy that got out with Andor, man. I don't think any of them made it except for those two.
Oh, Melchi. Is that his name?
I think so.
Melchi. Yeah. He's in Rogue One. That's the Rogue One guy.
Is he? Oh, is he really? He's like his buddy for life now.
Yeah.
So there's like 5,000 of them. I don't know if you've ever swam across an entire ocean, Steve. Not many people can do that.
Yeah, most of those guys either drowned or were picked up by the Empire and murdered or sent back to the prison. How messed up? So that prison has like a floor, so they make everyone walk barefoot and they can like, what, electrocute you at like a whim?
Such a cool idea.
And so they like... They ice a whole floor because some dude's time ran out and he went to be released, but instead of releasing him, they just put him on a whole new floor. And then that floor figured out what they were doing. So they just murdered everybody there to kind of keep that secret quiet.
Yeah. I think he got off floor 4 and went to 2 instead of another prison. They screwed up the bureaucracy of it.
Yeah.
And so,
the Death Star is notoriously always behind schedule, so they can't lose their workforce. Mm-hmm. So just keep the prisoners in there. No one cares about people in prisons.
Right.
You know, and again, prescient for modern times. Labor.
I thought it was such a good plot device because Andor's like, you know, there's nothing we can do about this. It's a giant galactic empire. What is little old me going to do? The best I can do is find a little tiny slice of happiness, Bix and my mommy, you know, some money, Bix and mommy. That's all I care about. And and so he goes to this beach planet. And then he gets arrested for a completely unrelated reason to Ferrix or Aldani. And it's like, it teaches him, none of us are ever going to be able to be happy with the Empire in power like this. Like, look at this. You're just going about your day, walking around on the beach, not hurting anybody. And then you're in prison for 6 years. Right. Mm-hmm. And then come to find out it's infinity years for no fucking reason whatsoever. Just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And that, I think that's what kicks it into gear slowly. that like he has to be a part of this if he ever wants to be happy at all. If anybody ever wants to be happy.
So I really like that scene on the beach because you get to see the K2SO droid.
Yes.
Which like you get to see it being menacing, which is, that's a really menacing design, but because K2SO is such a great.
No,
that's not what he meant. But the sand trooper that gets him in trouble is actually played by Sam Witwer. Do you know who Sam Witwer is? He does a lot of voices in Star Wars, but he's probably most well known for playing Starkiller in The Force Unleashed. But he also voices Darth Maul in the Clone Wars, and I think he's the new voice of Palpatine in animated things.
Oh wow, because he does some huge characters.
He does a really good Palpatine. I think he was actually better than the original guy who passed away who did the Palpatine voices in Clone Wars. But so this, the prison break, Nemec's character, it starts this thing where a lot of the characters just yell at each other to climb, because, you know, Nemec tells them to climb to freedom. They're climbing to freedom out of the prison. In Rogue One, K2SO tells them to climb right before he dies so they can get it. There's like this
good pull,
this really good, you know, it rhymes, you know, these elements where like these characters are always telling each other to climb, get out of the dirt, fight the Empire, get up, you know, and I really like that sort of message that they're saying there. But with that, let's talk about the last real bit of the show, and that is the final episode, the funeral episode.
So the penultimate is the Daughters of Ferrix, and that's when we find out that Marva dies, and she dies off, like kind of off screen, like we see her kind of frail and ill. But wow, what a cool.
The last time her and Cassian talked to each other, she's basically like, "I'm going to fight the Empire. Like they killed my husband, your dad."
Yeah, and that we found that out too in an episode that he was basically hung in the town square
for something he didn't even do.
Right.
Like someone threw a rock at some clone troopers.
Yeah, he was trying to stop them.
Yeah.
Incredible episode, man. I was watching it with my son and, you know, there were, wow, I didn't expect it to be overcome with emotion. I just had this image of him pounding on that fucking, that metal rectangle, you know, and Hammer guy, man.
I love Hammer guy.
So a thing about me, I was telling you this on the phone when I called you, when I finished it, but like, we don't talk about it a lot, but like dystopian is like my favorite genre. I think probably I could say that accurately. And especially if there's like a regime to overthrow, you know, like V for Vendetta is not the best movie in the world, but I unironically love that movie.
I love that movie.
It is so good because I like seeing, you know, motherfuckers get overthrown, you know? And then you got your
one fascist baby.
Your favorite guy, right, is in that movie as well.
John Hurt.
I didn't even think about John Hurt being there.
He's the evil fascist.
You would do well, Inspector, to put it out of your mind.
Oh my God, did John Hurt just come back? Is he here?
That's a good line. But when they're, you know, they give them the all clear to shut down Rick's Road and they can do the funeral with 30 people. They asked for more, so we gave them 40, right? And then you see thousands of people coming down the streets and you see those asshole stormtroopers start freaking out and like, all right, block the road. They're doing bad stuff. And the notes of the marching band, I'm just really easily moved by that stuff, right? And of course, Marva's speech was great, but ultimately I was already... And just when the first notes of that marching band, I was in it, man. And you can see Bix leaning through the window, like humming like the dirge. It's really powerful stuff, man. I did not expect to cry on air thinking about it, but really powerful.
Yeah, I've watched that scene maybe 10 times since it aired. It's so incredible. Just like, cause we met all these side characters earlier on. We see Brasso. Oh gosh, there's so many of them. There's Hat Guy who has the dogs. I can't remember their names. There's Melchi. We forgot to mention Salmon. I think his name, Salmon Pack. He was the guy in green. He gets tortured and killed off screen. When they capture Bix and his son, woman, I think is how you pronounce that. He's building a bomb. He's building a bomb in the first opening minutes of the show.
That's the moment that gets me is when he turns that sucker on. And it's one of those things like it's like, yes, you know, but look at it from the Empire's point of view. And that's what I love about this show and like other other like Children of Men, even V for Vendetta, places like that have done it really good job of showing you that, like, if you're just like a citizen trying to toe the line and put your head in the sand, moments like this that happen on Ferrix, those are acts of terrorism to you. That's what those seem like, right? Like, that's what the people in power say on the news about what occurred on the incident of Ferrix was an act of terrorism, you know? And I like that they, even though it's a Disney show and it's a Star Wars thing, it went there. Like, you know, yeah, they're blowing shit up.
Yeah.
Like the guy, there's a Ferrixian citizen on the, he's snitching. That's why he's over there, but he dies as a result of that explosion.
That's his name, yeah. And it's so incredible because you see all these characters, they come together for Marva's funeral. The Empire is kind of like, again, they're doing a similar thing with what they did on down Aldani, where they're kind of chipping away at this big funeral, right? Where like, oh, they want to start at noon, they can start at one. Oh, they want 100 people to show up, they can have 20. You know, they're just trying to chip away at their culture so they don't get together. But Marva is such a big part of the community that everyone just shows up anyway. And I thought it was genius that the song that the band plays has been the theme song for Andor the entire time. Mm-hmm. Like that. Oh, when I was like, oh, that's the theme. Holy shit. That's good. And then during Marva's speech, it keeps cutting to all these minor characters that we've briefly gotten glimpse of into their lives. Right. And you can just see how it's affecting them. Like they cut to Willman, the son who's, I assume, dad has just been killed by the Empire, and he's just built a bomb. And you, that actor Muhannad Bayer, I think is how you pronounce that. Just the pain and anger in that little actor's face is just heartbreaking. And when he's, oh, it crushes me. And Brass is looking real hard. It even cuts to, like I mentioned earlier, Luthen's getting really into the speech. It cuts to Mosk at one point, and you're like, oh, is Mosk like feeling this? Like,
yeah.
I wonder if season two, if, you know, Cyril and Daedra are going to like become the power couple and, you know, we're going to fight the rebels, but Mosk is going to be the ones like, I don't know if I'm about this life, sir. I kind of like the brick people now.
Yeah. Everybody's moved by it, or at least concerned.
So I've got to read some of it. I've got to read some of it because it's so good. Like, I fear for you. We've been sleeping. We've had each other and Ferrix, our work, our days. We had each other and they left us alone. We kept the trade lanes open and they left us alone. We took their money and ignored them. We kept their engines churning. And the moment they pulled away, we forgot them. Because we had each other, we had Ferrix, but we were sleeping. I've been sleeping and I've been turning away from the truth I wanted not to face. There's a wound that won't heal at the center of the galaxy.
A terrible wound.
There was a darkness reaching like rust into everything around us. We let it grow and now it's here. It's here and it's not visiting anymore. It wants to stay. The Empire is a disease that thrives in darkness. It is never more alive than when we sleep. It's easy for the dead to tell you to fight, and maybe it's true. Maybe fighting is useless. Perhaps it's too late. But I'll tell you this, if I could do it again, I'd wake up early and be fighting these bastards from the start. I love older actors just calling the Empire these bastards. It's my new favorite thing. When Luthen does it in episode 3, I loved it. Marva comes in hot and calls them these bastards. I'm like, fuck yes, hit that dude with a Marva brick.
And it's so fucking good. If I could do it again, I'd wake up. I love that line. I wake up early.
I show up early.
I get my tea at 4 a.m. before I start fucking these bastards up.
I turn my heat on in the apartment. I get ready. And then that kicks off the whole riot. And
well, it's like the whole, it always goes back to, I love that they put Andor in a prison too, because everybody's in a prison under the Empire. Right. And so you get this metaphor where, and then ultimately his realization is, I'd rather die fighting them than to die giving them what they want. And those are the only two options we have. Right.
Yeah.
So that's the theme of the whole show.
Yeah.
You know, we're probably going to die, but I'd rather die fighting them than die giving them what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And to realize as a Star Wars fan, and when you open it up, like all of this is going on, and little Luke's fucking digging a sand hole and pooping in it somewhere. And like, you know, like the, and that's where I like that you get the size of the galaxy finally. And like what really, it all started with this and these like real normal people, right? You know, mm-hmm. doing what they could, or no one else had a chance.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Fucking Yoda somewhere in the swamp. Don't know why I'm here. Probably something better I should be doing.
Bored I am.
Yeah.
What did Yoda do that whole time?
Dude, come on, man.
Probably. Oh, well, I, th- He learned how to talk to Qui-Gon and become a Force
ghost. Many useful things I could be doing. Just chiefing that swamp weed.
Making bread I have been doing.
Right. Almost like a COVID thing.
All of our pandemic plans is Yoda's been doing it on Dekka for this whole time. Building a shed, I will.
Getting a Zoom call, I am.
There was one last thing I wanted. I also wanted to read one little bit. This is part of Nemec's manifesto. I just think I love this type of shit because I'm with you, Chris. I love a good, you know, toppling the regime type stuff. And this show has maybe four or five great, excellent speeches that kind of speak to that and get you kind of like, yeah, let's climb, baby. Stone and sky.
Stone and sky. Stone and
but I really like this one because I think this one is puts it, you know, perfectly. This is from Nemec's manifesto. It says, and even the smallest act of insurrection pushes our lines forward. And then remember this, the imperial need for control is so desperate because it is so unnatural. Tyranny requires constant effort. It breaks, it leaks. Authority is brittle. Oppression is the mask of fear. Ah, so fucking good. This show has amazing writing.
It does.
I love it.
I'm with you. The best writing of anything Star Wars, probably. I think I can say that. As a whole, I do like me some flippy flaps and some lightsabers and stuff, right? But this show, I mean, it's an incredible, incredible feat, Andor.
Well, where do you think season two is going to go? If you had to make a, if you're in the predictions game, or what do you want to see in season two?
I have no idea.
Oh, goodness.
I think, obviously, we're going to get Andor more deeply rooted in the rebellion, right? Luthen was very happy to take him under his wing. We're going to see the exposure and death of Luthen, I would imagine. Probably Mira is going to find access. She's going to arrest Luthen. He'll have a last hurrah. He's not going to snitch on anybody, but he's going down.
It was Cassianander.
Probably the death of his little shopkeeper friend as well. She's going to go down with him.
Clea.
Let's see here. I think Mon Mothma probably gets away scot-free.
Well, I'm excited. There's one event and, you know, maybe fast forward 30 seconds if you want no spoilers at all, because they hint towards this event that happens in major lore regarding Mon Mothma, because the inciting reason Mon Mothma leaves the Senate and becomes a enemy of the Empire is through the Gorman massacre. And she talks about the Gorman several times throughout the show. And the massacre is, I think if I remember correctly, it's these Gormans, they're protesting the Empire showing up at their dock, and like Grand Moff Tarkin is in a Star Destroyer, and they won't, like, these protesters are like, hey, you can't land here. And Moff Tarkin's like, just fucking land on them. And so they just,
he lands the destroyer,
lands the ship like on like thousands of people and just murders them. And she like spoke out and like blamed the Emperor specifically for that. And they were like, okay, go kill her. And that's how she like became a member of the rebellion. That's the inciting incident that makes her leave the Senate. And that's how she gets found out. So I wonder if they're going to show that in this second season of the show, is how she actually becomes the leader of the rebellion. Not just a covert senator.
Disturbing to watch visually, you know?
Yeah. It'd be messed up.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's, I don't know enough about Star Wars canon. I can just surmise that the rebellion gets more rebelly. And obviously we got to lead up to meeting Jyn Erso or right before then, you know, so because they only have two seasons to do all that. So they got to get from B to C pretty quickly in season two. Mm-hmm. But I'm really excited for it. A lot more excited for season two than I was for season one, because after Kenobi, I was like, fuck.
Yeah.
I don't know how good these things are ever going to be.
Yeah. Because
we got Boba Fett and Kenobi back to back. And I was like, and Mandalorian's really good at times, but it's also kind of like sticky, you know?
It's Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun.
The baby Yoda and the, you know, it's, yeah, it's fun time. Mm-hmm. Luke's back. Hey, baby Joey.
Hey, that's that Luke Skywalker.
I love him.
I love that fucking guy.
That fucking Luke guy.
And the best episode of Book of Boba Fett was the Mandalorian episode.
Yeah, let's be real.
Let's be honest.
I loved Andor, though. Thank you all for sharing this with me and hopefully for being so patient. We got so many tweets and messages and DMs about, hey, where's the Andor coverage?
Well, real quick, you want to blaze through a couple questions that people sent in?
Let's blaze, baby.
All right. Ghost asks, do you think the Lost Sister plot was abandoned or meant to be a mystery?
Lost Sister?
You know, the first three episodes where he's like looking for a sister and that's why he ends up killing those two guards?
Yeah. Well, somebody tells him in like episode 7, stop looking for your sister. You're never going to find her. I think it's Marva when he goes back to Marva.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe. So it wasn't completely abandoned, but I think we'll find out a lot more about that in season 2.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely the MacGuffin to kind of kickstart the events of the story, but I think we're going to come back to it in some way, shape, or form.
And I was thinking of the Lost Sister episode from Stranger Things. So I was like, what are you doing here, Steve?
Huh? Oh, sorry. This is from a really old email. I do think
Holly will be back in season 5. I say that every year.
This is a good question. What are your thoughts on the lackluster popular appeal despite the critical acclaim?
I think that people lost a lot of faith after Kenobi and Boba Fett. Mm-hmm. I also think that as good as this show is, it's not what people want in a Star War. It's just like, it's what I want in a Star War. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's what a lot of the big fan base wants. They want Luke Skywalker. And it's like, keep bringing that motherfucker back. I don't care. You know, like that's how they are. Right. And so, that's unfortunate. I also read somewhere that the viewership for Andor was not as low as like that guy made that graph of, I don't know if, is that what you're, did you see that where he made the line graph of all the Star Wars shows and how Andor was the lowest that went viral. And a week later he came out like, hey, I did that wrong completely data wise. Sorry. It's actually doing pretty well. And it's not at all what I made it look like. I'm sorry. Oh. So he was actually, he had journalistic integrity to come back out and say, oh shit, I messed up the math on that one, or at least the histogram version
of
it.
Good for him.
But anyway, so I guess I don't have an intelligent answer for that.
Well, I think you're right. Like there is some lost faith because of Book of Boba Fett and Kenobi, but also, you know, and I made this joke leading up to the show, like, oh, you know, everyone's favorite Star Wars character, Andor.
Yeah, you did.
Can't wait to hear about that guy. We all remember Andor, our favorite from a movie.
Yeah.
I think that's also part of, or a lot of people, they were burned from Kenobi, they were burned from Book of Boba Fett, and maybe they just didn't have the time or energy to risk watching a show that they weren't 100% confident would be good.
And it's a prequel to a prequel. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I mean, that's any Star Wars
movie. No reason to expect that it would. Yeah.
That's any Star Wars movie at this point.
No reason to expect it would have been as good as it is though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. It's really, really good. Let's see. What other ones are good? Oh, maybe we talked about this. Which scene was the saddest and which scene had you fist bumping the air most?
Oh, the saddest. There's so many sad moments. The moment where you get to see Kino Loy just kind of looking at the ocean like,
I can't swim.
Fuck.
I can't swim.
And then Andor gets pushed off. Like, not that he was definitely gonna leave his friend. obviously when Nimic gets squished, that's very sad.
I get sad watching, I think it might be in episode 3 when he leaves Ferrix and there's just that shot of Marva crying. Like something about her, just that single tear rolling down her eye just really gets to me. And you could see the breath because her apartment's so cold. Fiona Shaw, by the way, is the actress.
Aunt Petunia.
And she's also Aunt Petunia in Harry Potter. And it's just amazing watching, because we're doing Harry Potter right now. We're seeing Aunt Petunia one day. And then you turn on this show and you're like, God damn, Aunt Petunia crushing it over here.
The only part I openly cry about is the funeral at Ferrix, an episode. That's the only time I openly, but apparently I cried just talking about it. So that's saddest. That's sad, but I wasn't like sad crying then though. I was like,
that's also a fist pumping moment.
It is. It's a fist pump, but just to throw in another one, I want to say Luthen's ship with the lightsaber sides. Oh, yeah, that was a fist pump moment.
Yeah.
Cause I'm like, cool. How's he going to get out of the tractor beam? He can't get out of a tractor beam.
He can't get out of a tractor beam. There is one question. I like this question. Does Andor get a special name for Easter eggs? So we have Easter Eggos. We have dragon eggs. Is there one we can do for Andor? I'm trying to think. I don't know.
Luthen artifact?
Easter brick.
Easter bricks. Bricked up.
Luthen artifacts. I like that. Holocrons.
A holocron. Yeah, we probably would have went holocron.
Holocron.
We were going to do extended coverage. Mm-hmm. Season 2, baby. Maybe we'll do episode by episode since it'll have an input fan base already, you know?
Yeah. Something
we can be confident people want to listen to.
Message Disney Plus and tell them not to have that show on Wednesdays.
Yeah, please, Disney Plus. Or maybe we'll be doing this full time by then.
Who knows?
2 years from now.
Hopefully. That'll be dope. Jordan-esque writes in, what are your boys thinking on the development of Cyril? I thought it was going somewhere big, and he and Andor were two sides of the same coin, but kind of left me wanting in the last few episodes. Bigger part in season two. I hope he will do more than be a Daedra sycophant slash stalker.
Well, that's a great question, Casey. And I think I talked about my thoughts basically in answer to this question in the actual episode about a half hour ago. But I think it was awesome to see an incel, you know, like the type of person that is just like fully supportive and gung ho for this kind of regime.
Tailors their own outfits.
But also, I think there's a lot more to explore in season two. I think she's right there.
Yeah. I do think there's going to be a lot of him and Daedra power coupling in the next episode, yeah, next season. But I think there is going to be that added wrinkle of Mosk kind of maybe pulling him away, or maybe he might have some sort of redemptive arc, because he does have a lot of similarities with Andor. I think
she's more redemptive than he is,
yes, she is. But I also think he specifically has a lot more similarities to Andor, meaning, you know, he also has a very important relationship to his mother, but like the opposite side of the coin. So I don't know. I'm really fascinated to see where that trio ends up, or that duo specifically, but I just want Mosk to be there because I love that guy.
Yeah.
That little human cannonball. Give me more of him. And then last question from Will. Will, he asks, who was your favorite character on the Empire side? Is it Daedra?
Interesting. My favorite character on the Empire side. I think it is Daedra.
Yeah. Daedra's a really good character. I do want to mention, Qyburn, whatever that character's name. He played Qyburn in Game of Thrones. I just love how he's like, what are we doing here? Tell me, and like the way he kind of conducts meetings, like, and what do you think? And now you, you speak.
He's good at his job.
We're done here. And yeah. He's so efficient.
Yeah. Flamboyantly efficient. That's how I would describe him. And I respect it.
I respect the hell out of it.
But ultimately, man, I loved Andor. And I can't wait for season two. Are you the same way?
Oh, 100%. Spoiler, I think this is my favorite TV show of the year.
Wow.
So, yeah. I loved it that much.
Yeah. It's very, very good. It's very, very good. Probably my number two, but I've been thinking about that a lot. But we got to get going here soon. We got Shaun of the Dead for the patrons, and we got Harry Potter Chamber of Secrets for the for the casuals and everyone else as well.
The casuals.
That's all the time we have for right now. Thanks for listening to our Andor talk. My name is Chris.
And I'm Steve.
And this was Streaming Things.
Stone and Sky. Stone and Sky. Stone and Sky.
Here's all the new patrons that we got in November.
New.
In the Try Before You Deny, man, category, we have Emmy.
Thank you, Emmy.
New to Marty B's VIP section, we have Carl DiMartino and Sean Kerrigan.
Oh, we know where the party happens in the VIP section.
Mm-hmm. In the Chocolate Pudding Producers, we have Laura Hardwick, Adam Jett, Jane McMillan, Katie, Alexandra Cordova.
Good luck.
Silja Hiljet Skatchim. I'm very sorry. That's obviously Icelandic, maybe?
Maybe.
Or Norwegian, maybe?
Maybe.
Anyway, sorry for butchering that, but I tried really hard. I think it's ruder to not try. That's my opinion. Yeah,
try before you deny.
Yes, right, try before you deny. What if Silja Hiljet Skatchim is a little girl, man? Cheyenne Bragg, Aaron Carr, Christy Ellens, Aaron, Toby Sands, Keenan Chu, Victor Weaver, Tina Gomez, SJ Dog 21, Kaylin Swift, Sharon Linden, Josh Seidel, Zoe Schubert, Andrew Diaz, Jada Haley, Nick and Aaron B.
Thank you, Nick and Aaron B. and everyone else you said. I don't know why I specifically said their name.
Mm-hmm. And in the Friends Don't Lie producers, we have Megan Stolarski, April Palmore Sullivan.
Thank you so much, and Friends Don't Lie.
And we've got some people who upgraded. What? Newest to the Try Before You Deny producers is Jeanette Murphy.
Hey.
And recently joining Marty B's VIP section is Jacob Schlier and Trisha Bueller.
This section is open to all.
Bueller. Trisha Bueller. I'm sure she's never heard that joke.
Never at all.
No, never. There's no way in hell. No one's ever been that clever.
Now she's going to hear it four times this month at least.
So thank you to everybody. Woo!
Woo!
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.